We're live. Welcome to the podcast with Will and Dan Mike.
And this evening we thought we would do a special edition of the podcast by reviving something that used to be in the past at Crossroads called Time with the Team.
And if you don't know, you guys probably don't know.
No.
Time with the Team is something that is age old. At Crossroads, we used to gather in like Rod's house with the staff, back when the staff was like four or five people. We'd go to Rod's house, the people who are new at the church, interested in finding out what's happening, we'd just go to his house and hang out with him and like ask them any questions we wanted. But because the church was growing so much, and even the staff now is like 30 people, we can't even get the staff into someone's house. And so we kind of...
The form of Time with the Team has been disbanded.
Yeah.
But we're resurrecting.
Yeah.
Here we are. And with two members of the team.
Right.
And we're spending time together.
Yeah. Time with the Team.
So, for those of you at home listening who don't know Ken and Jaylene Lucas, we're here to just hear some of their story and get to know them a little better.
We're going to talk about their past, their present, and you guessed it, their future. And so...
Christmas Carol podcast.
Christmas Carol, yeah. So, why don't you guys introduce yourselves real quick? They've been silent up until now.
We're just taking it all in.
Yeah.
I'm Ken.
The greatness.
I'm Jaylene.
And this is Nolan.
The grunter.
Guest producer Nolan.
So if you hear grunting, it's Nolan.
I like it. So, right away, I just want to say welcome to Grand Rapids. Welcome to the team. You know, we don't take it lightly that you guys are just linking arm in arm with us at Crossroads, and immediately you just feel like you guys are friends and family right away. And I just want to start by saying, like, what has led you to this point? Kind of like, tell us a little bit about way back, like how you guys met, way back, like where were you when it all started?
Wow, we're going way back.
Way back.
Way back. So going even way back to when we first met?
Yeah.
That's a good story. So Jaylene thought I was a dork.
Not true.
True story. We met in a wedding, and we were paired up.
In Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Woo-hoo! And Jaylene wanted nothing to do with me.
Paired up for what?
The wedding party.
Oh yeah.
So the bride and the bride's
well,
mom
yeah.
had a goal to get Jaylene and I to get hitched someday. Like, their whole goal was to connect us. Jaylene lived in Iowa. I lived
Holy
in New
cow.
Mexico at the time.
Pressure.
Yep. Lots of pressure.
Not really. It just wasn't going to happen.
So confident. I like it.
What year was that?
2006.
Yeah.
Oh.
2006, we met in Albuquerque. And the bride's mom, this is a true story, tried to set it up so I could give Jaylene a ride back to her house where Jaylene was staying during the wedding. So I waited around after the reception till like 2 in the morning to give this girl a ride back to the house. We're walking out to my car. Jaylene looks at my car and goes, "Oh, you have a Jeep?" I said, "Yeah, actually I do. I have a Jeep. Thank you. It's pretty sweet, huh?" She's like, "They get terrible gas mileage." I said, "Well, you know, I usually ride my bike to work, to commute."
Hold on, time out,
we're
time out. You know, Dan just bought a Jeep Wrangler, and we were just talking on the way.
Same one. I had the same one.
I was like, this is just...
Just a different color, man. Just a different color.
That's awesome.
And so I said, I commute on my bike a lot of days. She said, "You still get terrible gas mileage." We got to my Jeep. She looked at me and said, "Nice meeting you. Goodbye." And that was it.
Wow.
That was going to be the last time I ever saw Jaylene.
But were you, like, into it? Were you, like...
Oh, I was into
it.
I mean, she's gorgeous, and she loves Jesus. Why wouldn't I be? I mean, she's amazing.
But then I got a phone call from the bride saying that if I didn't meet Ken the next morning, Albuquerque has this big balloon fiesta. So it's, like, all these hot air balloons in the air. If I didn't meet Ken at, like, what was it, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, she wasn't going to go on her honeymoon. So it turned out she and her husband went back to the place where they had all lived.
I was roommates with the groom.
Okay.
And they forgot something before they were going on their honeymoon. So they came by the house at like 3 in the morning. And the bride's like, "So you and Jaylene are going to hang out, right?" And I said, "No." She said goodbye. It's over. So she grabbed my cell phone, went into the garage.
And blackmailed me.
I don't know what she said to Jaylene, but she came back out of the garage. She's like, Bloom Fiesta, 5 a.m., be there.
Wow. Someday that secret will come out. Someday that blackmail secret will come out. She might be a spy or something. Oh, yeah. Wow.
So anyways, it was fine, right? It was a good morning. But
did
I was
you guys
still,
ride
we still
in a balloon?
We didn't. We just like viewed them. They're like super beautiful.
Yeah.
But the bride's mom made us exchange phone numbers.
Because Jaylene was out of there. She's like, hey, once again, nice seeing you. I'm out. And the bride's mom's like, no way. Get back over here.
That's awesome.
Love that lady. So we talked once on the phone, and then I was recruited to work in St. Louis, Missouri. I didn't think I was going to go to seminary. I applied to go to seminary before this. It didn't work out. And so I was just hanging out in Albuquerque, and then a consulting firm wanted me to be a conference speaker. So they flew me out to St. Louis to interview me, and I said, hey, Jaylene, Iowa's not that far away. Let's hang out. So we hung out.
And he won me over.
How far away was she?
Like 6 hours? 5 hours?
It's like a 5 hour.
That's
yeah.
Pretty far.
It was like 2 hours for me to get there. But he won me over. We were married. Like a year later.
Wow.
We've known each other a year after we've been married a week.
That's awesome.
Sounds like a riddle. Yeah, awesome. Sometimes when I wake up in the morning, I do a logic puzzle, so that sounds like, how long have they known each other?
Sounds like algebra.
Where did you live when you first got married?
I turned the job down. And
it was a super good job. The guy was like, that was trying to hire him, had offered a private jet to fly us back and forth to visit each other. He's like, yeah, you're dating this new girl.
What?
Lives in Iowa. It was like a really good job.
Wow.
But that's part of what won me over is that he was willing to give it up because he really wanted to follow what God had for him. So I was like, that's cool. You don't meet very many people like that.
Yeah.
So
you already kind of had some inkling in your heart that you wanted to pursue ministry.
Yep.
You already kind of hinted at it with the seminary thing.
Yep.
When did all that kind of start taking shape?
Yeah, I didn't become a Christian until I was a young adult. So I was like the wildest guy at the bar.
Like what's a young adult?
24.
Okay.
So finished college, didn't want to do with my life. Played beach volleyball, traveled around, made some cash in tournaments.
What?
Tore up my knee for the second time, and that was at the end of that. And it was out of that, I guess, just the end of athletic stuff, and realized you can't really make money to find happiness. So that's when the gospel just took hold of my life.
A lot of our listeners were just shocked when you said that right now. Money does not buy happiness, people. You heard it first from Ken Lucas.
I thought you were going to say they were shocked that he played beach volleyball.
I'm only 6 foot, so
I don't know.
That big
I can picture it. I can picture it. The like old Oakleys, you know, that are like baseball players.
Cars
wear,
cry, baby.
I threw them away. Don't worry.
Visor, backwards visor. Oh, yeah, bro. Nice spike. All right.
I love it.
And so, beach volleyball is over.
Dunzo.
And then what?
Jesus.
Wow.
Literally,
that's how it usually happens.
Beach volleyball, then Jesus.
Yeah.
The natural progression.
Beach volleyball leads us to Jesus. Never thought of that before.
So everyone's story is a little bit different. How did you get saved? Like out of that young adult, craziest guy at the bar, beach volleyball scene.
Yeah. So I literally was visiting, I was working in Dearborn, Michigan at the time. So I was starting a job and doing well there. And I went back to Albuquerque to see family during a Thanksgiving break. And it was during a worship service at a big church called Calvary Chapel of Albuquerque. And I don't remember anything from that service other than the fact that this guy said, if there's anyone out there who is struggling with, like, they're at the end of their rope, that they're just finding that in life there's nothing that makes sense or gives your life purpose and meaning, here's an opportunity to find it. And you can only find it in Jesus Christ. all I know is I started bawling like my little son here. And then the next thing I know, I'm in the front of this big, huge building, weeping and praying. And the cool thing about that story is there was a fella named Gabe Salazar, who was a good friend of mine, who was always like sharing the gospel and being a good friend to me when I was just a jerk. I mean, I'll admit it, I wasn't a good guy. And Gabe was also at that service, saw me go up to the front, and then all of a sudden I feel his hand on my shoulder.
Heck yeah.
And he's just weeping with me. And that, I mean, literally was like a light was turned on in my life. And yeah, there was no turning back. I mean, I didn't. It's been one progression towards what God's calling us to do in the church planning.
Sweet. I feel like we just lost half the team.
We did.
Just coming back, though.
Just coming back.
Oh, it is.
How long have you been a Christian, Jaylee?
Since I was, like, I think 6. My parents said that I gave my life to Christ quite a few times, but I distinctly remember one night, I had a very, very vivid imagination, and so my parents always left my closet light on in my bedroom, and I imagined, like, all these monsters on our ceiling, and I was sure that they were going to eat me, and I was going to go to hell, so I screamed bloody murder.
Grief.
And my dad came running. I think he thought there was a burglary or something. And I was like, I need to pray and ask Jesus into my heart.
Wow.
So I think I was like, yeah, 6 or 7. That's my first memory.
Yeah.
So.
Is there a tradition of that in your family? Like Christian tradition, obviously, if you're 6.
Not
really. Is there some talk about Jesus or anything like that?
No, my mom and dad were actually part of the Jesus People movement.
Okay.
They came to know Christ in college. So they were, I mean, they were pretty hardcore in their faith, but neither of them, I mean, both of them grew up in, like, Christian homes, people that went to church, but it was just, like, on Sundays.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, like, a life commitment thing for them. But they lived very differently. Like, for them, it was every day. So
were
constantly talking about it. We had missionaries come to our house all the time. And yeah.
That's cool.
It was, like, normal. I thought everybody had that.
That's really cool. So, you guys are together. You're married. You're both Christians. The stuff in St. Louis didn't pan out. You're back in Albuquerque. Go.
Someone handed me a book called The Missional Church. And I read this book. And already I was somebody that was kind of evangelistic. So if I met you, I'd hear your story. And I'd try to find ways to share good news to your into your life. And I love that and still do, but I always felt like there was something more. Like, what if there was a group of people who were witnesses to the goodness of God's love together? Like, we were a community of witness. And so I got this book, and I read it, and I said, yes, this is it. This makes sense to me. This is what I see in the scriptures. This is what I want to be a part of, is a group of people who are passionate about the gospel. And it just so happened that the guy that edited the book and wrote parts of it taught at a seminary in New Jersey. So we drove from Albuquerque basically after I read the book and met this guy in Princeton, New Jersey. Just drove out there. Yeah.
How long is the drive?
It's like 30 hours.
Yeah, like long days.
Yeah.
Without kids, no.
Without kids, it's a mistake.
You can do it in one day without kids, right?
10 miles. It's a car.
That's awesome. And was it a permanent drive, or was it like you just went out there to meet him and then you're going back to...
We went out to meet him. I mean, we looked at another seminary on the way back, but we wanted to meet this guy.
Yeah.
Like that.
What's his name?
Daryl Guder.
Guder. Nice.
He's Swiss-German.
Little book plug right there. We're getting no payment for that, by the way. It's all very free. book recommendation.
Here you go, Daryl.
Missional Church. It's awesome. And was that forming time, being there in New Jersey for you guys?
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, we met this guy, and he said, come and join us. So I applied to school and got in, and we moved within a year. Jaylee finished nursing school, and then we moved to Jersey. So I can go to seminary.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did that shape your I mean, did that just continue to develop that same tinge inside of you from the book? And, I mean, is there any circumstances that you found yourself in Jersey that really shaped your framework for how you see church happening in the West?
That is a good question. So, yeah, we were really fortunate to be brought in by Daryl and then other faculty who have kind of drank this missional bug of, like, God is a God of mission, the scriptures capture the mission of God. And so I studied everything through that lens, so that was great academically. But more importantly, there was a church there. The pastor was teaching with Daryl at Princeton, and he was a practitioner of this kind of thinking about church. So we moved while we were in Princeton to live in this community about 50 miles away, and I commuted to school because we wanted to learn concretely, how does this look in a church?
Wow.
So
such a good decision. It was so valuable to us. Just to, like, live in community and see people that were doing it every day. Right?
Yep. Seeing people use their homes. Like, a group of people moved into the same area of a town.
Intentionally.
And they used their homes for mission. It was just an awesome sight to see. And that was more informative for me than learning in the classroom. The classroom was great, but seeing it was better.
What did that look like?
Yeah, maybe, like, I think...
you're saying you've been living with a group or things
I think, like, the idea of missional church and God on a mission is probably new to a lot of people hearing that, just because people say this is Jerusalem, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many churches here, this is Bible Belt, like, we know how to do church. And so when you say church on mission, that's a new phrasing and stuff. So what is that, you know, what does that look like?
Yeah, so in this particular case, well, backing up, church on mission just looks like, what does God want to do next in a particular place? Grand Rapids could be a place, Jersey Shore where we were is a place. But what's that thing that God wants to do next to reach broken people, to bring his healing love? And so this church was formed by a group of young adults who put their money together to do outreach to high school kids who were dropping out of school, smoking weed, getting kicked out of their homes, and just, I mean, they were a mess. And these young adults had to leave a church that they were a part of because the church that they were originally a part of said, we don't want those kind of kids here. So these young adults didn't know what they were doing and just left the church. And then they found out that there was a guy who was going to seminary that was from the area, the neighborhood, and they asked him to help. And this guy was my pastoring mentor. And so the church was formed based on outreach to high school kids and young adults who were completely unchurched. And that influenced the way that they worshiped.
Yeah.
You can't use churchy language to unchurch people. And what we learned was church people don't know really churchy language too. Like, we could slap justification on terms and righteousness and all that stuff. But until you start to, like, translate what those things mean in our everyday lives, we saw that people don't know what they mean. So it was really neat, I think, not just for unchurched people, but for church people to taste and see the gospel in this missional kind of a way. And so, yeah, the mission influenced small groups, inviting young adults to your house and showing them what does it look like to be a family that's united in Christ. It was fun. I mean, that was formative. I mean, what do you remember about that?
I just remember just lots of people intentionally trying to hang out and meet and live life together. So, like, eating meals together, just really genuine life. Like, I'm going through a really hard time. My dad is really sick and in the hospital. I need help. You know, like, helping each other out in really real ways.
Yeah.
I mean, this gets used a lot, but it's more of thinking of church, like, go to them than them come to us. Like, we form Christian community out in the frontier.
That's good.
Versus some central location.
So we were there during Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah.
And it was a really awesome experience because we saw,
literally thousands that would disagree with you.
Let me hear you phrase
millions,
that.
Actually.
awesome in the experience factor of community, not
opportunity. Awesome opportunity. Yeah.
Losing electricity for 10 days when I was 7 months pregnant.
15 days. 15 days.
Oh, no. It was really rough. But just seeing how, like, our community came together and just went out with, like, chainsaws and sandwiches and wood and just, like, met the community. And just so many people serving each other.
Yeah, it's funny because we were, I mean, really not that big of a church, a couple hundred people. And we would meet at the pastor's house every morning. And people would just show up with chainsaws and shovels, whatever we could, and we just gut homes all day. And then pretty soon people found out in the community what we were doing, and they would just jump in with us. And we'd just drive out with trucks of people. And I'll never forget, there was a guy who joined us one day, and he was a dude like in his 40s or 50s, and he just lost his business, and he was about to lose his home for financial reasons. And he served with us all day long, and then after the day, he's like, you know what, I learned what my purpose in life is. It's not for me. It's for the benefit of other people, which is the gospel, right? I mean, the gospel is the good news of God's love for the world, not just for us.
Yeah.
And he told us that that was the day he was going to commit suicide. Like, he had given up. And then to see that he was made for this was, like, the thing that changed him.
That's awesome.
And now he's rolled up his sleeves, and he's doing kingdom work still to this day. And it's just, it was awesome.
That is awesome.
That's what I meant by agree.
Yeah, I know, we're just getting a hard time.
We're a team, we're a team.
So,
it was awesome.
Sounds like, you know, here's where, you know, the next step for you guys. Like, it sounds like a lot of things are going really well there in Jersey for you guys. And yet, here you are. And so, like, what, I know that there's probably years and headaches and heartbreak or whatever in that time. But, like, what's brought you? I think a lot of people are wondering, like, oh, you guys are here. Out of all the places.
I mean, if it was so great, why did you leave?
Right.
Yeah. And that's,
why didn't
you? Yeah, that was hard. You know, we have some deep friends. I mean, our kids' godparents are all out there, and, I mean, they're more than godparents. A big part of it was we ended up sticking around after seminary, and then we were a part of a church that had 12 people. The average age was 70, and they were about to close their doors. They asked us if we would jump in with them. Of course, we said no, and they said, would you please pray? So we learned never to pray about things you don't want to do. Because we prayed for 24 hours straight, and God was like, you're staying. We didn't know how we were going to get paid. I always get paid.
Yeah.
Jaylene was a nurse, so that's fortunate for us. But we didn't, I mean, we had no young people. We had nothing. We had this church that was pretty much at the end of its ropes, really lost its credibility in the larger community. And we said yes. And God did some amazing things. Where, once again, young people were coming to faith. And we learned a lot about how do we disciple new Christians who are completely unchurched to become leaders in a Christian community. And I'll be honest, there's not a lot of good resources for that.
It was super challenging.
I bet.
Like, a lot of people would tell us, oh, you gotta pull them out, and for like 5 or 6 years, really make sure that they got their life together. Then they can become leaders. And we're like, we can't wait 5 or 6 years.
Goodness.
Like, now's the time. So we learned a lot. We made a lot of mistakes, definitely. But at the end of a 2-year commitment, we realized that we wanted to be West. We love the West. I was being recruited to plant a church in Seattle. I was making trips out there to preach and speak at some conferences. And we felt like we had a really cool opportunity with my mentor at the seminary, too, as a part of it loosely. So we planned to move West. And then I have some family in Grand Rapids who are like, come to Grand Rapids. This could be a chance for you guys to lay up 3 to 6 months and then go to Seattle after some rest. So we originally thought that we would just hang out for 6 months and then maybe move to Seattle. Looked like a sure thing. And what we learned is there's no sure things from our perspective, right? I mean, this was like a golden opportunity with lots of... This is the opposite of what we were a part of.
Yeah.
Lots of resources, great people, a great opportunity for an unchurched culture, which we felt called to and trained for. And at the end of 6 months of being in Grand Rapids, which we met amazing people, got to do some research on a few prostate projects. But at the end of 6 months, our partners just said, hey, we have to delay. We can't have you guys come out right now. And we have 3 kids. We had 2 kids.
Well, we had a surprise coming
we
along.
We had a Grand Rapids surprise. His name's Nolan Dietrich Lucas. Oh my God. So Jillian was pregnant, and then we had two kids, 3 and 1, and we were just like, "There's no delay. Like, we're staying in Grand Rapids."
Yeah.
So we didn't know where we were gonna live. I didn't know what I was gonna do for a job. But we knew we had to stay. That's how we got here.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Fire away.
What's your job?
What would you say you do here?
What exactly is it that you do here?
You've seen that movie, right?
Of course. Yes.
Okay, so I'm a church planting pastor at Crossroads Bible Church. Crossroads.
Pastor of the church plant.
Pastor of a church plant. So as you all know, or at least you two, and others may know as well, is Crossroads has been wanting to plant a church for a while. And so they've been looking for a church planting pastor, and I got parachuted into Grand Rapids, or we did, and it was like the perfect timing. And I can honestly say, it just happened. Like, it just worked out. Crossroads was looking for somebody, and I was looking for a place to jump in and to serve in the kingdom. So, I mean, I'm a church planting pastor, and my task is to build a team and then identify a place and start a new church.
How do you feel about all this, Jalen?
I'm super excited about it. I actually spent 5 years of my life from, like, when I was 19 to 24 living abroad. I traveled all over with a missions organization called OM.
Operation Mobilization.
Oh, you got it.
Passing out. Oh, because you're a nurse.
Well, it was pre-nurse. I was just fresh out of high school.
Books?
It was books, and then we did like a lot of like sports, all kinds of different stuff with kids. We did like AIDS awareness.
One time, I was in Scotland and I met this old man who was wearing a coat that looked like the Globe.
George Brewer.
And then I came home and I come to church and I was playing on the band with Will, and this old man. Who gave his... Oh, yeah, he gave his jacket to a guy at the thing that I was at in the
UK. He likes to do that.
Then he shows up wearing the same jacket to Crossroads. And I'm like...
He's preaching at Crossroads.
I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I just met you in Europe. I'm like, yeah. And he goes, I just happened to be over here. And I was praying for some place to let me share. And they let me share here. And then he gave his jacket to Rod.
Rod has his jacket.
Are you serious? Yeah. I want
to
see it.
The only thing I remember about it
is
that
Rod
he gave Rod his jacket. He had the big blow up world, and he was dancing around with it. He's like beach balling it into the crowd as he's like preaching. And anyway, that guy's crazy. He's awesome. But he's
I don't even
crazy.
Know why I brought that up.
Well, you were talking about your 5 years.
Oh, so like, I guess my desire to. Talk to people about Jesus, and it's something that gets me really excited. And I've always been really committed to Ken's desire to church plant. So, I mean, it's not just his desire, it's mine too. Like a desire to reach out to people, something new. I mean, lots of people have gone to church, or lots of people have been hurt by the church, or don't have any experience with it at all. And it's a great opportunity to. Meet them where they're at.
And bring a little reconciliation to some of that.
Justification.
Sorry, I use church language. So, we know that blackmailing's in your history already. Did you have to do any of that to get this job at Crossroads? Or how did that happen? And
no
I'm joking. Yeah, obviously.
No
I'm
blackmailing,
joking, but
I
just
promise.
Like, I mean, it's just almost sounds too good to be true. Just the right place, the right time. Is that it? I mean, that's it.
I mean, that's God. I mean, really, it was just a God. Going out in front.
Yeah.
I mean, I made some friends here, and friends knew friends, and that's how I was first introduced to the Crossroads community formally.
Cool.
But we were already worshiping at Crossroads and decided that that's where we wanted to make our church home.
Yeah.
So it just coalesced. And sidebar, Jillian's way cooler than me, just FYI. She's a way cooler person.
No one's questioning that.
I You already know.
Why did you just say
that? Yeah, why did you say that? Give us an example.
Do you know what a sidebar is?
I know what a sidebar is.
What's an example?
Ron Swanson does sidebar all the time. You're like, this is what you're talking about, then sidebar that. So here's an example why Jaylene's way cooler than me.
Okay.
In New Jersey, we had this huge formal dinner with all these students, and there are students from all over the world who are about to do great work studying the Bible. And I went to go grab a drink for Jaylene, so I'm coming back to her, and all of a sudden I hear this, and I'm like, what is going on? And Jaylene is laughing her head off with this other gal from...
She was from Loza.
See?
Whoa. That's pretty good.
Just like, jumped way ahead of me in coolness, right?
That was pretty good. Can we hear that again?
Loza. It's from, it's like a little area in South Africa.
South Africa.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, yeah. Colson is what we say in our Southern American language, like... Colson, right? Like a little...
It's like they have...
It's like an X, right?
Yeah, it's X-H-O-S-A. It's, they have like 23 tongue inflections. So they'll be like...
See?
That's awesome.
I'm telling you.
That's really cool.
Just one of many examples why. Jillian's cooler than me.
So how long have you been doing the church plant and pastoring at Crossroads?
I started October 5th is when I started. So I went through an interview process with the elders, and that actually was what won Jaylene and I over to the Crossroads community.
All right, so what's been developing in your last 4 months?
So I got a partner in crime. I mean, Jaylene obviously is my partner, but there's a guy named Brad Claver, who you all know, great guy.
Uh-huh.
He and I are partners. He and his wife have been praying about this for a while, and... they're in. So he and I are partners, being sent out as a twos from Crossroads. And the biggest part that we've tried to focus on is just our we're calling it a blood brothering phase. We just have way too many examples of people being sent out in twos, and then a year or two in, it falls apart. So we wanted to make sure that we do all that we can to prevent that from happening. I mean, the enemy wants to divide, right? I mean, that's what the enemy does, is divide. So we're working really hard to not do that. We went on a retreat to New Jersey. We're doing a lot of whiteboarding. And then we're starting to gather people together who are already saying, hey, we want to be a part of this new community. So things are happening informally because the Spirit's going out in front of us. But the most important thing that we focused on is our relationship.
Heck yeah.
And then... being involved in things at Crossroads too, to learn the DNA, so the forum, preaching, just other things where I can jump in and just learn how you all have been doing things.
Yeah.
So that way, as we're sent out, we can also look like the church that sent us.
Yeah, I appreciate that a lot, because in some way, like, you're catching Crossroads DNA, but also like Brad, who embodies Crossroads DNA so deeply, is catching a little bit of like the missional DNA. He's had it for a long time, but your expression of it, as you guys bring from New Jersey, is a little bit different flavor, you know? And so as you guys team up together, you're bringing him back to Jersey. He's having Rook coffee. He's meeting your friends, the kids' godparents, all that kind of stuff. But you're here too, diving into Crossroads and just really cross-pollinating both of those things. And it's really good to see, because both of those are going to project this church plant so well into this area, I think, you know?
What type of people do you feel drawn to in the city? Is it geographical mainly, or is it more philosophical?
Probably more philosophical. We've always really, I think I kind of hinted toward this before, but we're like really interested in people that have gone to church and have had a bad experience. So, you know, like, grew up in the church and then just didn't feel like they could ask questions, or, you know, just stopped going to church. Seems like a lot of people that I work with as a nurse have had that experience. Mm-hmm. And then seems like there's a lot of people who just did not grow up in the church, period. That don't know, you know, all these like churchy words that we've talked about, have absolutely no idea what they mean, and they feel very uncomfortable with them. We're also really drawn to people like that, where they feel very uncomfortable with church and with Christians, and but are curious. You know, they want to know what it's about, but don't want to go near church or Christians for whatever reasons. That's something that we both have mutually been drawn to.
Yeah, we love seeing people who don't know the gospel come to faith. We love it. And we think it's just great to, like, form a community that's focused on that as well. And what we're learning is there's just a lot of Christians who are lonely, too. I mean, they know the good news. They know the right things about the scriptures. And but they're just yearning for deep friendships in Christian community. So I think that's a part of how God will use his church plant, is to build off what Crossroads has already been doing really well, is just helping people find good friends on mission.
Genuine relationships.
Yep, genuine relationships.
Authentic.
I've heard a lot of people, even at Crossroads, pining for that already, you know? Because like you said, you know, we were talking a little bit about the size of it. You know, it is big. You can walk in there, and even though there's 1,000 people in that tiny hallway, if you're not connected, you can talk to nobody. You know, you can make it to the cookies and make it to your chair, and there's sometimes nobody will say hi to you.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who have given their lives to Christ, and they're wondering where that community piece is. And it's hearts like you guys have that draw that community piece out of it and into their lives, you know? So I'm looking forward to that, man. I'm looking. It's exciting.
We have to say about Crossroads, though, too, is one thing that when we were just actually going to Crossroads, when we were still planning on going to Seattle, I think I cried probably every Sunday just because we were so touched by
singing.
It was you, Will.
And there was a preacher there, a guy with glasses.
If you came on a Will and Dan Mike Sunday, it's hard to
walk out of the
drive. Say no more.
It's like, this is the real expression.
You can really, I mean, we just really felt God's spirit there, his presence, and just in the people. There's like a real love for God. It's contagious. It's made us feel like on fire again.
It's awesome.
It's a great group.
Yeah. It's true.
Like,
in such a big group, like, spontaneous prayer, just saying, hey, let's just pray about stuff, and people praying, I was like, oh my gosh, where am I? What just happened? It was awesome. I can truly say that. What's that?
Last night. No, it was good last night. Don't say dang it.
I missed out.
Yeah, you did.
I was playing Eucharist with Max.
You missed out on Dylan singing in church, which sounded more like yelling, but
he was trying.
So I think the, you know, one more thing that people will be really interested in with you guys is just like, what does the next year look like for your family, for you and Brad and Michelle together? Like, what does that look like? And I know that a lot of it is still, you're trusting the Lord one step at a time, one day at a time. But, like, he's given you guys good dreams of the future. And if you could see those manifested, like, what would they be?
Yeah, so the next steps, well, just for us as a family, is to continue just to settle into Grand Rapids and be as healthy as we can as a family, because we've got some boys, young kids, that we want to just pour into. And that's always important for us, is just building into our family as a witness to what families look like, the way that God designed. But as far as the church plant goes, the next steps are going to be starting to formally invite the larger church into prayer nights and informational gatherings where we can start to share where, you know, how God is giving us a vision for this, some of the initial things that we see that are happening in Grand Rapids that we could form a church around.
Are there any of those convictions or things are already starting to develop?
Yeah, I mean, a big thing, you know, and not that this is a blanket statement by no means, but just a lot of people who are hungry for genuine community. I mean, Bonhoeffer wrote this little tiny book called Life Together, and that thing sold like hotcakes because we, even as Christians, we are yearning to be in good relationships with each other, to grow, right? To grow more in our faith, but also just to grow with other people and to bear burdens with each other. To take off those masks that we put on to say that everything's great when things aren't great. And, you know, you could do that a lot easier with friends.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be a part of this. But there's a whole bunch of things economically that are, you know, there are people who are doing really well in this town, and there's some people who seem to be stuck in situations where they're not doing well financially. So I'm not sure how that'll play into this. This town's changing.
Yeah.
You know, as an outsider coming in, there's just a lot of people moving in who weren't shaped by G.R. Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And they may not know the gospel, or they're here just for a job. So there's an incredible opportunity as a church to just reach different people.
Yeah, we were going to ask you about that, you know. That's kind of an extra credit question of things that you've been discerning. Maybe an outsider's perspective on Grand Rapids, some of the idols or some of the things you're picking up on as you've been living here for the last couple of years.
There's a lot of good grub here, that's for sure. A lot of good food. Oh, yeah. But
thanks for saying that.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to all the great restaurants in this town. No joke. And there's great people.
If you mention one or two, maybe we could get like a free, free appetizer or something, free salad.
You got anything to come to mind? West Sider Cafe. Boom.
Ooh, she'll appreciate that.
Harmony.
Harmony.
Oh, yeah, Harmony all the way.
Both of them.
No, oh, okay, I was going to say. Do you like both or just...
Both.
Yeah, all right.
Wow. Monarch.
Shout out to Monarch.
How about you? What do you got? Where's go-to for you, Will?
We do the Mitten a lot just because it's great pizza. And it's right, you know, right here on the west side, too.
The west side.
But, yeah, I eat up the West Sider a lot. Yep. And then there's a few places downtown that we frequent.
Across the river. Yeah.
Might flood and sweep us over. No. I mean, a big part of this culture here is it's a Christian culture. And that's great because, you know, people are fast and ready. They love the Bible. They love learning new things about faith. And that excites me. I love that.
Yeah.
To be able to work with people who are already passionate about the gospel. But with that, you know, sometimes Christianity becomes more of a routine. It becomes a normal pattern for living. But the gospel is nothing routine. It's not a normal pattern for living. God calls us to do things that make absolutely no sense all the time. So I wonder how that is going to be an impact in this particular place. Because he doesn't call us to be good. He calls us to follow him.
That was deep. I was thinking just like, it's a nice, the river's here. It's nice having a river go up through there. That was deep.
Another good movie, by the way. River runs through it.
There is a lot of snow here.
10-2. 10-2. What do you think about that? Is that a good thing? Snow?
Well, how many times have we shoveled our sidewalk?
A lot.
Like 10 times in the last 3 days.
A lot.
I hear the lake effect frequently.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is that? No.
It's like a snow globe that just keeps getting shaken up and down.
We're like stuck in a snow globe.
So last thoughts. I mean, is there a church plant concept until this date, and now it's just a church? You know.
Like launch date or something.
Yeah, like is it? You know, that's
October 2017.
All right.
Well, thanks for chatting, Ken and Jaylene.
You heard it first here.
And
October.
More details to follow in between there. If anybody's interested in.
Maybe if there's a way that you feel comfortable saying, hey, you can email me at...
Yeah. You can email me at ken@crossroads-bible.org.
Is that true?
No, actually, it's K. Lucas.
Oh,
sorry.
Say, wow. Holy cow.
Or you can send it to my personal email, too. ken.f.lucas@gmail.com.
What's your middle name? Frank. Brad.
Keep guessing.
Fabio.
You'll never.
Fabio, you got it! Ken Fabio Lucas.
No, what is it for real? She said we'll never get it.
It's all a mystery.
Well, there you have
it's
it.
It's a mystery.
Thanks for listening to the podcast with Will and Dan Mike. If you're still looking for more information on the Lucas family, you can email Ken at klucas@crossroads-bible.org. Thanks again, and until next time.